There are source sheets. If anyone does not have, can they just let us know? The schedule will be that this year will be around 12:45 or so, and then we will more sheets. Yeah, and then we will have lunch and leave for the walking tour, hopefully from here at 1:30. During lunch, people who have special needs to get to getting to this place, we might be able to work something out. So I'll speak to you about that later. So without further ado, Molly Brodsky.
Welcome, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. I understand you've been kind of sitting in these chairs.
Louder!
Okay, I'm going to stand here. I'm
going to scream.
Yeah, it's a good idea. You've been sitting here since, like, what time in the morning? 9:15? And this is your, like, last cheer of the day. So I'll try to kind of keep you awake as much as I can. The source sheets, as you see, are kind of source intensive. But that's why I bolded things, because what I'll be doing is I'll be reading mostly the things that are bolded and translating them, and this is just the reason that I gave you all the sources and all of the kind of pieces is because, and this is really where I want to start, the point of this shiur is to look at Yerushalayim in the Tanakh, right? How Yerushalayim was conquered the first time historically, and to see that process, and to see if there are any parallels or lessons we can learn from that process then until today. And so therefore, it's all just, you know, Tanakh based, and I felt like it was important to give you everything, and that's what we're going to do. Okay? All right, so let's start in the beginning, okay? And as you see, right, the main focus is going to be on David HaMelech, King David, who was the one who really put his stamp on the meaning of Yerushalayim. Okay, so the first thing that I want to point out, which I think has a parallel to today, is that Yerushalayim was not captured with the rest of the area of the state of Israel, as it were, at that time, right? Meaning, who was the first person to conquer the land? Yoshua, right? And if you look at your sources, right, source number one, okay, this is from Yehoshua. Et ha-yivusi yoshvei Yerushalayim lo yachlu bnei Yehuda lahorisham v'yeshev ha-yivusi et bnei Yehuda v'Yerushalayim ad hayom hazeh. Okay, now why was it Yehuda that was attacking the area of Yerushalayim? Because Yerushalayim, I'm sure Rabbi Haber must have talked with this a little bit, right? Nachalo, right? The territories? No? Okay. So in Yehoshua, every tribe, every Shevet is responsible for to conquer and settle their area of the country. So the question is, whose Nachala is Yerushalayim? Okay, and the answer is actually that Yerushalayim lies on the boundary between Yehuda and Binyamin. Okay, it belongs to both Yehuda and Binyamin, and actually there's something very interesting in that we have from the Gemara that says that even though it's in the territory of Yehuda and Binyamin, Yerushalayim was not given to any one Shevet, but it's actually the territory of all the Shvatim. Okay, which is going to be important as we continue. But what we see is in the time of Yehoshua, Yehuda, the Shevet Yehuda, came to conquer Yerushalayim, and they were not able to drive out the Yevusi, who were the inhabitants of Yerushalayim, and therefore they were not able to conquer and settle the land. And we have in Sefer Shoftim a further description, which may be, it's not clear, is this a second attempt by Bnei Yehuda to capture Yerushalayim, or is it just Sefer Shoftim summarizing what happened in Yehoshua, okay? But either way, let's look at what happens. I think it's missing over there. V'yilachmu b'nei Yehuda b'Yerushalayim, this is source 2. V'yilkudu otah v'yakuha lefi cherev v'ed ha'ir shalchu ba'esh. Okay, that's the first pasuk, which says that actually b'nei Yehuda did conquer the city. They actually captured it, and they burnt it, right? They conquered the physical area. However, source 3, Ed ha-yivusi yoshev Yerushalayim lo horishu b'nei Binyamin, right? Which is interesting, right? Yehuda seems to have had the job of conquering the city, and Binyamin seems to have had the job of actually settling the city, and it was Binyamin who was not able to actually take over the territory and settle it. Right? And therefore, the whole tkufa, the whole time period of Sefer Shoftim, Yerushalayim is still not under Jewish sovereignty. Right? Much very similar to today. Right? And Yerushalayim, it seems, is waiting for something. Right? Who is Yerushalayim waiting for? It's waiting for, what did you say? Mashiach. Right? It's waiting for David. Okay? Because, again, we have the whole Tkufa of Yehoshua. We have the whole Tkufa of the Shoftim. We're talking about 400 to 600 years, right? We have the first king, Shaul, okay? Even when we actually have kingship, Shaul does not capture Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is waiting for David, okay? So now let's take a look at the story of David's conquest of Yerushalayim. Okay, so the first source I gave you is source number 4, which picks up the story a long time after we've met David. This is at the moment, not even when David becomes king, okay? Because David actually becomes king twice. He becomes king over Yehuda, and then there are 7 years of civil war between David and the son of Shaul, who is holding on to the kingship. And it's only in Shmuel Bet Perek Hey that, and now let's go to the source, and I'm not going to read every word. I'm just going to read the bull just to save time, okay? But what happens, I'm going to paraphrase, what happens is that the war is over, and all of Am Yisrael, all of the Shvatim, all the leaders come to David, who was at that time in Hebron, that was his capital, okay? And they come to him, Vayimshechu et David lemelech al Yisrael, and he becomes anointed king of the entire nation, okay? And then there are psukim that describe his kingship. He was 30 when he started, and he was 7 years in Hebron, and he was 23 and a half years in Yerushalayim. The first act that David does as king, right, the very first thing he does, right? Vayelech hamelech, pasuk vav, v'anashav Yerushalayim el hayivusi yoshev haaretz. Okay, the first act that David does as king is he goes and he conquers Yerushalayim. Okay, now again, I don't want to go into too much detail of this battle. I actually brought you both versions. If you look, source 4 and source 5 are the versions in Sefer Shmuel and the version of Divrei Hayamim. Because what's interesting about this story is that we're told the details of the battle, which is not usual in Tanakh. Meaning, if the details of a battle are told, there's obviously a reason, right? Because most times it just says they went here, they fought here, they conquered. It's a very detailed description of how David managed to conquer Yerushalayim, and it's actually somewhat different in Shmuel and in Divrei Hayamim. The information fills in each other. I would recommend everybody go to Ir David if you haven't. Take one of those tours, and they'll take you down to like the Canaanite water tunnels and those big stones, and they'll explain, right, how the new finds in Ir David helped explain these sources that we didn't understand for years, right, and how David actually managed to conquer Yerushalayim, why it was so difficult to conquer Yerushalayim. And again, the reason I brought it for you is because I wanted to show you a couple of things. First of all, Pasuk Zayin, Vayelko David et Mitudat Zion Hu Ir David, right, David captures Ir David, Pasuk Tet, Vayeshiv David b'mitsuda, I'm again in source 4, can't follow me. Vayikrala Ir David, Vayiven David Saviv Min Hamilo Ubeita. Right, so David conquers Yerushalayim and he makes it into his capital city. And if you look both in Shmuel and both in Divrei Hayamim, the story about the capturing of Yerushalayim ends with the same pasuk. Vayelech David Holech VeGadol, VeHashem Elokei Tzvakot Imo. Right, David becomes greater and greater, and God is with him. Right, and I think that already tells us something about David and Yerushalayim. Right, again, Yerushalayim was waiting for David. This act of David's to first conquer Yerushalayim is approved of by God. Right, there's this very positive religious and spiritual relationship between David and Yerushalayim. Okay, which we'll get to in a second. Well, maybe now. Okay, why does David choose to make Yerushalayim the capital, right? Why that city specifically? So there are a bunch of reasons. Politically, geographically, it's at the center of the country, more or less.
Water.
Right? Well, water, it doesn't. Well, it has water outside of Ir David. So that's an interesting question. The truth is, it's an interesting point, because Dafka, yes, in the time of David, he had access to water, right? There was that underground tunnel. So it might be. It's an interesting question to think about. But there's the political central location. What else is it? I said before, it's the Nachala of who? Where does it sit? Yehuda and Binyamin. Why is that symbolically extremely important? Because he's uniting the people, right? He's taking Yehuda, who is the most important child of Leah, and Binyamin, who is the most, well, I don't want to say the most important child, but one of the children of Rachel, right? And he's taking their spot and uniting them. And don't forget, who did Shaul come from? Binyamin, right? So he's saying, rather than seeing Binyamin as a threat, I am uniting the people. Okay, and again, remember that Yerushalayim has this concept that it belongs to the entire nation. So the aspect of unification is extremely important to David. What else? Yerushalayim seems to have this historical, religious significance for the Jewish people, right? There are these, exactly, Har HaMoriah, Akedat Yitzchak. Right, there's this place that the Tanakh talks about, Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, the place that God will choose, which seems to be this area, right, Yerushalayim. And so there's a sense that Yerushalayim is inherently God's spiritual dwelling place, and therefore when David chooses it, he's also saying, my kingship is not really about me as king, it's really about God as king. And that is my kind of approach to my kingdom and to my kingship. Okay? Were there any other reasons I left out? Brit Ben Habitarim? Where was Abraham when he did Brit Ben Habitarim? It was very early. It was like the first place he was. Still in Beersheba? Yeah. I don't know. But certainly Akedat Yitzchak. Certainly Akedat Yitzchak. Right? And again, every time it says, Hahar HaTov HaZeva HaLevadon, right? They say when Yaakov had his dream, right? It has this clearly a mesorah of spirituality associated with Yerushalayim. Okay. And again, just to show you that David definitely was establishing Yerushalayim as his spiritual center, what's the very next thing he does? Right? He's now conquered Jerusalem. Okay? And by the way, in these prakim, he's about to go to battle with like Ammon and Moab and Edom. He's going to expand the kingdom. But before he goes out to do that, what's the very next thing he does after he captures Yerushalayim? First of all, he builds a wall, creates a city, right? But he says, what's missing?
The Beit HaMikdash.
Exactly. But before the Beit HaMikdash, right? What do they have that's in the wrong place?
The Aron,
right? The very first thing he does. Okay, and here I brought you source number 6. 1 second. Yeah, I brought you just the first few psukim from Divrei HaYamim because, again, I want you to see how much David emphasizes unity and achdut, always, in every single thing he does, certainly when it comes to Yerushalayim, but I think in his whole life. But Yomer Pasuk Bet here, and again, you can just focus on the bold. Yomer David Lechol Kahal Yisrael. David says to the entire nation, right? Let's go together, the bold. El Acheinu Hanisharim Bechol Arzo Yisrael. Let's gather everybody from wherever they're sitting in the far-flung places in the country. Right? Now remember, the Aron has been sitting there, right? Since the Mishkan in Shiloh was destroyed, the Aron has been sitting in Kiryat Yarim. Okay? For whatever reason. You can go back to Shmuel Aleph and find out how it got there. But it's been sitting there for years and years, and Shaul HaMelech basically ignored it. Right? And David is saying, the first thing I want to do is take that Aron and bring it back to its place, which is, now I have it. I have the spiritual center. Let me bring the Aron to Yerushalayim. Pasuk Hey. But Yechahel David at Kol Yisrael, all of the nation, Min Shichor Mitzrayim Va'ad Lepo Hamath, right from Egypt to Syria, Lavi at Aron HaElokim Mikriyat Yarim, to go and get the Aron. Okay, now we can turn the page. Right, and David goes and he brings the Aron. And again, we're not going to go into the details of the story, which in itself is a fascinating story. I just want to point out in the story the emphasis on unification of the people. Okay, Pasuk Bet. Vayakam v'yelech David v'chol ha'am asher ito, all the people, right, to bring the Aron, Pasuk Hey, v'David v'chol be'i Yisrael misachakim lefnei Hashem. David is dancing before the Aron, but he's not alone. He is sweeping up the entire nation in this rejoicing. Okay, Pasuk Tetvav, again, just follow the bold. V'David v'chol be'i Yisrael ma'alim ad Aron Hashem b'tru'a u'b'kol shofar. David and the entire nation are bringing up the Aron. And what is David doing? Every four steps, he is stopping, bringing karbanot, and feeding the people. Okay, so again, right, it's very important to David to include the entire nation in this very public celebration. Okay, Pasuk Yutet, you can see here, he actually gets up and he, Vayivarech et ha'am, he blesses all the people. And Pasuk Yutet, Vayichalek l'chol ha'am l'chol hamon Yisrael, l'mi'ish v'ad isha. Again, notice the detail in the Tanakh emphasizing every person David gives out to the entire nation, right? That's one phrase. To the entire crowd, l'chol hamon Yisrael, l'me'ish v'ad isha, from every man to every woman, right? La'ish, four times, we're saying everybody, everybody. Chalkat lechem, echad v'ashvar echad v'ashisha echad, where he gives each piece of bread, a little bit of meat, and something to drink. And then we have the story of Michal, and again, I'll leave that for those of you who are interested in that story and what they're arguing about, but it's very much part of it is this. Am I part of the people? Am I separate from the people? For David, being part of the people and bringing them up to him, right, is central to who he is. Okay, all that was by way of introduction. I'm going to have to go fast, but don't worry, we'll get there. So David has now captured Yerushalayim. He has established it with the Aron as the spiritual center of the country. And what's the next natural step? Build the Beit HaMikdash. Like, that just seems to make sense to David, right? And indeed, that's the very next thing that happens, right? Perek Zion, right? David is sitting in his house, right? And what does he say, right? He says, it's not right. I have a palace, and the Aron is in a tent, right? That's not appropriate. It's time to build a Mikdash, right? And what happens? He says this to his Navi, Natan HaNavi. And what does Natan do? What would you expect the Navi to do?
You think he's going to say good for you.
But well, actually, that is what he does, which is fascinating, right? Because I would have said, consult God. That's his job. He's the mouthpiece of God. Go and ask God. He doesn't. He just says, right, look at Pasuk Gimel, right? Vayomer Natan al HaMelech, kol asher bilvavcha, I can't see because the underline. Lech asei ki Hashem imach. Right? Go for it. Go do it. God is with you. It makes total sense. You should build a Beis HaMikdash. Go and build it. Now, why does he not consult God? What? Right. David is with Hashem all the time. Like, why would Natan have any question that David should not build a Beis HaMikdash? He thinks it's a no-brainer. He doesn't think this is one that you have to check with. It's just so obvious. It's again, it's such a natural next step. David, Hashem is with you. You're doing great. You're just building and building. You and God are partners. You're like this. Build a Beis HaMikdash. Go right ahead. Okay? And then, however, right, a wrench is thrown into the system. Right? And that night, David is given a nevuah through Natan. Now, if I ask you, right, what happened? Right? Why was David not allowed to build a Beit HaMikdash? What will you tell me? What did you say? He has blood on his hands. That's what most people think. It's interesting, David HaMashiach, I think in one place it says that. It's because of Uriah and Chizki.
But
which is?
If he builds a Mikdash, the Mikdash will survive. The people will not.
Okay, so that's an interesting perspective. He's saying that it's like Moshe Rabbeinu, and when you have one person that's so powerful, if he does everything, and that's how I'm understanding what you're saying, it's not healthy, right? It has to be not a cult of personality, but rather the entire people. That's a very interesting approach. Most people will answer, right? If I had to take a show of hands, and I said, how many people think it's because David HaMelech had blood on his hands, I think most hands would go up. That's what we're all taught, and we'll see why. But actually, if you look in Perek Zion, that's not the reason that's given. Also, I think most people think of that as a punishment for David, right? You were too bloody. So let's look at the Perek, and we'll see that that's really not what it says at all. Okay, Pasuk Hey. This is the Nevuah to David. Lech va'amarta el avdi el David. Now, if Hashem is angry at David and punishing him, would he use that type of language? My beloved, he doesn't say beloved, but my servant David, right? This doubling is a language of affection. El avdi el David. Right, my dear David, right? It's a very gentle, loving language. It does not sound like a punishment is coming. Kol Amar Hashem. Now again, if Hashem's message is you are not allowed to build me a Mikdash, what would the language be? How would you say it?
You will not build me.
Right. Ata lo tivneli bayit. Right? You right? What's the language? Ha ata tivneli bayit l'shifti? Are you gonna be the one to build my house? Right? It's not you are not allowed to build my house. He's saying is right, it's a question. It's a rhetorical question. Are you the one to build my house? Well, why not? Right? Why not? So let's find out. What's the answer? כי לא ישבתי בבית למיום העלותי את בני ישראל ממצרים עד היום הזה, והיום אתהלך באוהל ובמשכן. בכל אשר הלכתי בכל בני ישראל, הדבר אשר דיברתי על אחד שבטי ישראל, אשר ציוויתי לאור עמי, לומר למה לא בניתם לי בית ארזים. What is Hashem saying? He's saying, let's take a look at history, right? Since the time of Yitziat Mitzrayim, was I ever in a house?
No.
Did I ever complain about not being in a house? Right? No. So what's the ta'ana here? Has nothing to do with bloody hands, right? What does it have to do with?
Timing.
What? Timing, right? It's about timing. That's the exact right word, right? The same way Yerushalayim waited for David until the time was right, the Mikdash also has to wait until the time is right. And obviously the next question is, well, what's the timing about, right? When is the time right? So let's keep going. Okay. Because he's saying, all the years I never complained about not being in a house. Meaning, it's not about God needing a house. It's about when the time is right, right? This year it's not yet happening. This year it's not yet happening. This year it's not yet happening. The house is not about me needing a house. The house is about something more. And that something more, we have to wait and see when that moment arrives. Again, we'll keep going, okay? Let's keep going, and then you'll see whether it's more convincing to you, okay?
Yudbet.
Yeah, okay, so look at Yudbet. And he basically says, listen to what's going to happen, and I'm going to, this is that actually in Ted and Yud, you might want to look at, where he says, basically, I'm coming with you, I'm going to settle the land, you're going to have a time when everything is peaceful and prosperous, and then, okay, Pasuk Yudbet, Kiyim le'u yamecha, v'shachavte et avotecha, when you die, v'hakimoti et zaracha acharecha, asher yitzei mimeecha, v'hachinoti et mamlachto. You are going to have a son, and he is going to have an established kingdom. Pasuk Yud Gimel, hu yivne bayit l'shmi, v'chonanti et kisei mamlachto ad olam. Ani heye lo la'av, v'hu yeh li leven, next bold, v'chasti lo yasur mimenu kasher hasiroti me'im sha'ul, asher hasiroti melefanecha, ונאמן ביתך וממלכתך עד עולם לפניך, כי שכה יהיה נכון עד עולם. Now, what's that about? Right? All of a sudden, there's this nevuah thrown in here. What is it? You're going to have a son. His name is Shlomo. He's going to build the Beit HaMikdash. And all of a sudden, we get all this new information. What's this new information? You should also know, David, by the way, that what? The kingdom is yours, right? Meaning, what's happening? What is Hashem saying to David? You want to build me a house? Guess what? I'm giving you a promise. I am building you a house. Meaning, right here is where we get the promise to David of Beit David forever, of Zera David, right? Which is what you have said, it was waiting for Mashiach, essentially, right? Mashiach ben David. There is, the kings will eternally be from Beit David. That bracha is given to David right here.
Okay?
What? Nachat from his children. Absolutely. It's the ultimate nachat. That's really what he's being said. It's never leaving. You're going to get mad. I'm going to punish you. There's going to be, you know, it's not going to always be so much fun. But the melucha will never leave David forever. Now, the question is, what does that have to do with anything? And why is that here? And what is this about David? Why is this kashur to David not building the Beit HaMikdash? So what's the deeper underlying, why can't David build the Beit HaMikdash? What is Hashem saying? Hashem is saying, what is the Mikdash waiting for? The Mikdash is waiting for a time of, essentially in one word,
Achdut.
Right, peace. Achdut, stability, peace. Okay? What symbolizes peace and stability more than anything? A dynasty, right? There has not yet been a king whose son has ruled the people, right? So Hashem is promising, David, you will have a dynasty. That will ensure stability, okay? And that's when the Mikdash will be built. Okay? The Mikdash needs peace. Okay? And so essentially what's happening here is David is not being punished. He is really being rewarded. Okay? And if you look at his response to Hashem, you'll see this is not a person who's received a punishment. This is a person who's received a tremendous gift. Because look what he says to Hashem. Where is it? Pasuk. Yurche. David comes and he davens in front of Hashem. Vayomer, mi anochi Hashem Elokim, umi beiti ki yevayotani ad halom. Who am I to deserve what you're giving me? Vatiktan ot zo beinecha Hashem Elokim, v'tidaber gam el beit avadecha l'merachok. It's not enough to give me things. You're giving me gifts for like until the end of time, right? L'merachok, forever. What else can I say? How else can I say thank you? Right? The response of David is not disappointment, it's tremendous gratitude because he has just been given a tremendous blessing. Okay, let's turn the page because now what I want to say is actually, if you look at Chavtet, that's just the same idea. Never mind. Don't look at Chavtet. If you look at it, you'll see it's the same thing. David and his lineage and the Beit HaMikdash are intrinsically intertwined, right? It's only Beit David that can build the Mikdash. And essentially what we're going to see is David really does build the Beit HaMikdash.
It parallels Avram Yitzhak, Avram Yitzhak and Yaakov creating a nation.
Yes.
That's like
it's like a, you need like a three...
Now we need the next level.
Yes, yes. It's very true. It's very, very true. Okay, so essentially what happens is David does build the Beit HaMikdash. Meaning, as we'll see, and you have to look at Divrei HaYamim, and that's why basically nobody ever learns Divrei HaYamim, so we don't really know this. But if you look in Divrei HaYamim, David does everything. He essentially gives Shlomo a Lego set with instructions. But you'll see, it's literally like that. He's got the workers, he's got the materials, he's got the architectural plans, he has everybody counted. It's all done, okay? And all Shlomo has to do is put the pieces together. So essentially, David does build the Beit HaMikdash. And why do I want to focus on this? Not just to kind of understand, to see David's process here, but to understand, again, the deeper meaning of how does David prepare to build the Mikdash and what lesson is there for us. Okay, so let's look first. The first thing he does is the physical preparations, okay? And again, I started with Chaf Bet, and I kind of took us through all the prakim with Divrei HaYamim because it's amazing how many prakim are devoted to this. Okay, so I didn't give you all the prakim because it's literally like, you know, you're flipping through like 20 pages in the Tanakh, but I gave you like the kotarot, so you'll know what the subject is. So it starts with Chaf Bet, Pasuk Aleph, Vayomer David, Zehu Beit Hashem HaElokim, Bezem Mizbeach Leolah LeYisrael. The Mikdash! I have to build the Mikdash! Right, that's basically what he said in those that Pasuk. Pasuk Bet, Vayomer David, Lechnos et Hagerim, Asher Be'eretz Yisrael, Ve'amod Chotzvim, Lachtsov Avnei Gazit, Levnot Beit HaElokim. He gathers all the workers to do the stone cutters. Okay? Gimel, Ubarzel LaRov, all of the iron for the, as it says, for the Basmerim, the pegs and the doors and the Sha'arim, and okay? Hechin David. So that's a very good point
over
also. Shlomo was born. He did this, basically David must have done this over his entire life because as we'll see, he names Shlomo to be the king to build the Beis HaMikdash. How do we know? Think about his name. What's
Shlomo.
His name? Shalom. Shalom, right? And he says it. We'll see the pasuk. You'll see it in a minute. It's underlined. Ki Shlomo yeshmo v'shalom v'sheket etein al Yisrael b'yamav. Right, which seems to imply that Hashem even told him, name him Shlomo. So when David chooses to name the second child of Bathsheba Shlomo, that's very thoughtful, right? He says, this is going to be the child that is going to build the Beit HaMikdash. I think Shlomo was 12 when he started building, and David died at 70. So do the math, okay? So that's when he starts doing this. Okay, it's basically his life's work. Fatzei Arazim, right, the cedar trees. And then Vayomer David l'Shlomo, he says to Shlomo, my son, B'ni na'ar v'rach v'habayit l'vnot l'Hashem, my son is a young boy, and the Beis HaMikdash has to be built. L'hagdil l'malon l'Hashem, okay, blah, blah, blah. V'yachin David l'rov l'fnei moto. There it is. David did all of the work, right, l'rov, most to all, before he dies. And then he calls Shlomo. Vayikra l'Shlomo b'no v'yitzaveyu l'vno b'ayit l'Hashem Elokei Yisrael. He commands Shlomo to build the Mikdash. Pasuk Zayin. And here it becomes interesting because here we have where the Shfichut Damim issue comes into play. Why do we all think David can't build it because he has blood on his hands? Because that's what David himself says. So let's look at it. Pasuk Zayin. Vayomer David l'Shlomo. V'ni, ani haya in l'vavi l'vno b'ayit l'Hashem l'shem Hashem Elokei. I wanted to build the Mikdash. And Hashem said to me, "Dam larov shafachta umilchamo gedolot asita lo tivne bayit lishmi ki damim rabim shafachta arta lefanai." Right, your hands are full of blood. You have fought a lot of wars. You will not build the Beit HaMikdash. Where did David get this from?
Nevuah.
Okay, so one way of understanding it is to just say it's two different nevuah, right? there's a nevuah that wasn't reported in Sefer Shmuel that's being reported to us now in Divrei Hayamim. Right? That's one way of understanding it. Okay? Another way of understanding it is to say there's really no contradiction. It's just a question of David's perception. Right? Because what did Hashem say to him? The Mikdash needs to be built in a time of peace. So how does David hear that? I am a man of war. Now, another very interesting point is what language does he use over and over? Damim rabim shafachta. Right? Dam larov shafachta. The phrase is shfichut damim. Okay, if you look in Tanakh, if you look in a concordancia, when is the phrase shfichut damim, bloodshed, used? It's only used in the context of what? Is it? Yes, that's one of the Yareg Val Yavors. Is it in Hashem? It's one of the big three. Without Zarag, Lura wrote shfichut damim, shofech dam ha'adam, ba'adam damo yishafach, right? If you murder someone, essentially, shfichut damim is a phrase that is exclusive to the shedding of innocent blood. It is not used in the context of warfare. It is only innocent blood. It's like murder. Okay? And so why is David using this expression? Right? I have shed innocent blood. Okay? What I think he's thinking about is, that's very, somebody said Uriachiti, maybe, and he really got it for Uriachiti. Moab? when he kills Moab. It could be that's also a piece, but he does that. I happen to think he's thinking about all of the civil wars that he was kind of against his will, but responsible for, right? Those first 7 years, there's a lot of bloodshed between Beit Yehuda and Beit Binyamin. Okay, if any of you remember those stories, and there's that the 12 on 12 who fight each other and they kill each other, and then this giant war happens, and that's when Yoav says, "Haletzach tochal charev," and Abner says that, right? Are we going to just keep killing each other? And David feels tremendously guilty. David had Meret Avshalom in his time, right? He had a civil war. He had Meret Shema ben Bichri, which is also B'nai Binyamin. He feels tremendously guilty about civil war in his time. And again, this fits in. What's he saying? There wasn't peace in my time. And I think what David is saying here is a very deep message, which is when he thinks about the message of Hashem saying you need peace in your time, it's not so much about the external peace with the nations. What David understands is it needs to be internal peace, right? And in the history of the Jewish people, we never achieve external peace until we achieve internal peace, right? So David is saying, right, my time was, it was too bloody. There was too much innocent blood shed among Am Yisrael. And he, I think, is taking the responsibility for that. Whether or not God is giving it to him, David is taking it. Okay? And it's interesting to think about Uriah HaChiti, because that's when David really learns to take responsibility for his actions. So that's a nice connection. But anyway, so let's go on. Right? And then he says, right? And here he continues. So like, even if this is a different nevuah, he conflates the two. Because here he goes on to the nevuah that he got in Perek Zayin and Shmuel. Hine ben olad lecha, hu ya'ish menucha, right? He will be a man of peace. And I will make all of his he will have peace from his external enemies. His name will be Shlomo. He will be a child of peace, and I will give peace during his lifetime. He is the one who's going to build the Mikdash. Right? And then David continues with this bracha, which is intrinsically tied. Building the Beit HaMikdash is intrinsically tied to the bracha of Zera David, the kingship of the house of David forever. And he continues with that. Okay? And then Yudzalid, he basically says to Shlomo, V'hine be'enai, hachinot to the Beit Hashem zahav, kikarim, be'kesef, u'menechosher, u'barzel, and mishkal, and ve'itim, ve'avanim, etc., etc. Ve'imcha larov osei hamilacha, right? I gathered all the materials, all the people, v'chol chacham, v'chol milacha, all the experts, zahav, v'chesef, v'lechole, blah, blah, blah. Pasuk Yitzayin, V'yitzav David l'chol tzerei Yisrael, azor l'shlomo b'no David. Again, doesn't just tell Shlomo. He includes all the people, right? All of the leaders. Okay, now again, we don't have to go through the details of this, but just to look at what David does. In Perek Chaf Gimel, V'yosef et kol tzerei Yisrael, v'hakohanim v'halevi'im, v'yisperu halevi'im, v'yachlakeim David machlakot. What does David do? He counts the Levi'im, and he divides them into their subgroups to work in the Mikdash. He gets them ready, right? Kim amadam liyad bnei Aaron avodat Beit Hashem, right? Meaning, how did it work? They were divided into 24 mishmarot. The Kohanim would come every group according to their week in the Mikdash, and they would work, and then they would go home, and then the other group would join them. Right? And the Levi'im had the same type of system. David counts them, organizes them, puts them into their groups. Pasuk Perak Chaf Dalet Ulevnei Aharom Machlokotam. It's the same thing with the Kohanim. Okay, and then in Chafchei, which I didn't bring you, he counts all of Bnei Yisrael. Okay, and then in Chafchet, after he's done all this gathering, he makes a grand. This is basically his grand goodbye. Right, David is about to die. What's the last thing he does before he dies? But the first thing he does as king is Yerushalayim. The last thing he does as king is the Mikdash. He builds the Mikdash essentially, right? Pasuk Aleph, Yikahel David at Kol Sarei Yisrael. He gathers everybody together, and again, if you look at the pasuk, it's them and him and him and him and him and him, everybody together. This emphasis on this unity. Pasuk Bet, Vayakam David Hamelach al Raglav. Right, he's an old man at this point, and if you look at Malachim, he can barely like stand, and he can't stay warm at night. Right, so you can imagine David, right, tottering to his feet.
He wasn't so old.
He was 70. It's very, but he was. I mean, he was exhausted. I don't know. Had a long and extremely active life. Yeah, he did a lot in his life. Right? He had a lot of wives. He had a lot of battles. Think about all the years he was running around from Shaul in the mountains. Like, he did a lot, David. By the way, that's a very nice point. You know, the Midrash about Adam HaRishon gave David his life. So there's this sense that, like, David is every man, right? And look how much you can accomplish in 70 years. Like, what every person can actually accomplish. Okay, so what happens? Vayomer, he says, Shamuni achai ve'ami. Again, listen, my brothers and my nation. And again, the whole story. I wanted to build the Mikdash. I was already, and God told me. Okay, turn the page. You can't build it. I'm not going to read it again because we've heard it already, right? But you can't because you shafacht adam, right? And Hashem chose me to be the leader, and of all my children, he chose Shlomo, right? And he is going to establish my kingdom forever. I'm really just paraphrasing. Pasuk Hey, Pasuk Vav, Pasuk Zayin. And he's going to establish my kingdom forever if he follows the rules of God, right? And then Pasuk Yud, Re'e Atah, Ki Hashem Bachar Bacha Levnot Bayit LeMikdash Chazak V'aseh, right? He turns to Shlomo in front of everybody and says, you know what? God chose you. Now you go and do it. Vayitain David l'Shlomo b'no et tavnit ha'ulam ve'et batav ve'ginzakav, whatever, I thought it was the ginzbarav, ve'aliyotav, ve'chadarav ha'pnimim uveit ha'kaporet. He gives him the detailed plans, down to the last little, like, you know, cell, right, of in the Mikdash. No, this is Shlomo's kingship, or David? Oh, is it before Shlomo? I mean... It's an interesting question. I don't know. Because Yerivayim doesn't have to go back and look.
You don't transfer the...
He's not... No.
Until the one is...
Right, there. Right. And that we have the whole account in Malachim of, right, this fear that Shlomo will not be king, and David actually does coronate him in his life to make sure that he becomes king. Right? They all go down to the Gichon and they coronate Shlomo. So I don't know when this happens.
He was...
I think so. I think that's in the text.
Maybe,
but I'm being careful. It could be like I learned that as a midrash many years ago, or it was actually in the text. Somebody has to go look it up. But I know that he was young. He was definitely young. Okay. Now what happens? Again, Re'ei Atah, Ki Hashem Bachar Bacha Levnot Beit LeMikdash Chazak. Oh, wait, have you read that? But Tavnid Kol, blah, 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 blah. And all the people, and all the Kohanim, and all the Levi'im, and all the work, and etc., etc. And he gives him the Kalim, right? This is for the Minorot, and this is for the Mazle Goat. These are for the, like, for the Karbanot, the forks, and the shovels, right? Everything is ready. Ulebizbeah HaKetoret, right? It's all down to the last detail, right? And then he says at the end, right? Go for it, you know, be strong, do this. Here's all the stuff, go, okay? He had otzarot. By the way, every time David wins a war, as if you look in Shmuel, he takes it and he gives it to the otzarot Beit Hashem. All the stuff that all his shalal goes straight into this. That's what he does his whole life. Okay, so then it's the end. Pasuk Chavtet is the more ceremonial part. He says l'chol hakahal, right? You know, to the entire nation. Here's my son. He was chosen and he's ready. And here's all the stuff. Right, and he more here all the precious gems and all the tapestries and every stone and blah 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 blah, right? And pasuk tet here. This is source 12 pasuk tet. Vayismechu ha'am al hitnadvam ki belev shalev hitnadvu laHashem. He's included the people, right? A lot of what has been given into the Otzarot HaMikdash has been dedicated by the people. Okay. Was donated, exactly. V'gam David HaMelech Samach Simchak Gdolah. I just think this is such a happy parak. Like, David's happy and everybody's happy, right? V'vareich David Hashem L'enei Kol Yisrael V'yomer David. And this is what we all say in davening, when whoever says this. V'vareich David. This is when it was originally said, right? When David dedicates the Mikdash before he dies. Okay, and he says to the people, you bless Hashem, and I'll bless Hashem, and they have zvachim and olot, and they're eating, and they're happy, and everything's wonderful, right? V'yachlu v'yashdu l'fnei Hashem b'yomahu b'simchak Gdolah. Here we go. L'Shlomo ben David. They re-coronate Shlomo here at this occasion. And the end of this perek is basically the end of David's life. This is how we tie up David's life. V'David ben Yishai melech al kol Yisrael. David was the king. Right? Turn the page. I don't think I got it all I have. Yeah. But then, essentially, the next thing that happens is David dies. Right? So this is the last thing we're told about David. The end. Okay. So now, the question is, so David basically prepared the nation physically for the Mikdash. However, what we're going to see is that physical preparation is not enough, right? It's not enough to have the stones and to have the architectural plans, because what we said before is it's about timing, right? And for the timing to be right, it's not about, you know, like we have Machon HaMikdash, we've got our menorah, we've got our stuff, okay, why isn't there something this year, right? It's not about the physical stuff. It's beautiful to kind of show God that we're so excited that we're going to do all the physical stuff. But the timing has nothing to do with physicality. The timing has everything to do with spirituality. And the question is, how does David give that message? And what is the spiritual time that is the time when the Mikdash is the time for the Mikdash, and here again we come to us and what message we can get. How many years did they build the Mikdash? That's in Malachim. You have to look at Malachim Perek. I think 3 years. I think it took 3 years. It says there. It says in Malachim Perek, like Aleph through Hey Vav Zion, I think is where it is. It's a good question. But I think it took around 3 years. Okay. Look at Tehillim Ayin Bet. I want to look at two Mizmorei Tehillim where David very clearly says, when is the spiritual time for the Mikdash to be ready? Okay, this actually is a very moving Tehillim that we don't really relate to. Why is it moving? Well, look at the beginning. Perek Pasuk Aleph, Lishlomo. So how would you understand that word, Lishlomo? So, right, so either you say, well, like L'David. Like if you have a Mizmor that says L'David, what do you assume? That it was written by David. So if I saw Lishlomo, right, exactly. So those are your two choices. Either it was written by Shlomo, or it was written to Shlomo. Now, how do we know that this was written to Shlomo by David? It's actually very beautiful. Look at Pasuk Chaf. Kalut filot David ben Yishai. Right? Not only do we know that this was written by David, but we know this is the last mizmor David wrote. Right? This is the last thing he wrote, is this mizmor to his son. Right? It's very, very moving. It's very beautiful. Right? This is the legacy he's leaving his son. Okay? And so he's basically telling him how to rule. Right, how to be a king. Okay, and what does he say? L'Shlomo, Elokim mishpatecha lemelech, right, Hashem should give his rules to you, the king, v'tzidkatcha leven melech, right, and he should give his, so what are the two words? Hashem should give his mishpat v'tzedek, or tzedek v'mishpat. Right, what are tzedek v'mishpat? In Tanakh, always, what do they always mean? Social justice. Right, that's in a buzzword, what tzedek u'mishpat mean? Right, a time when people are behaving appropriately towards each other, and there is social justice. That is David's ultimate message. The mikdash will come when there is tzedek u'mishpat in the country. Okay, pasuk bet yadin amcha b'tzedek ve'anyecha b'mishpat. Right, you have to rule your people with, again, tzedek u'mishpat. Yisa'u harim shalom la'am, right? Then there will be, that's the shalom, right? We're not talking about external shalom, we're talking about internal shalom, which can only come about when there is tzedek u'mishpat, when there is social justice. That is the meaning of shalom, right? Ugva'ot b'tzedaka, right? And then there'll be tzedaka on the nations. Yishpot anyei am yoshia livnei evyon v'yidake oshek, right? Your job as king is to judge the poor of the nation, to save the weak, and to
judge the poor.
Well, judge them righteously, okay. Righteously judge the
to
poor.
Do
right,
justice
do their right. Do right, be just to the poor, right? What, and to push down oppression, right? To get rid of oppression. That is your job as king. Okay, If you keep reading, you'll see that it goes on in this perek, but we won't keep going. And I also want to save time because we have two minutes. Ori told me I had to 11:45, so or 12:45. So I'm gonna smush it. I'm gonna take my three more minutes. I want to look at Tehillim Kuf Chaf Bet, which is just you have to. How can you not look at this Tehillim on Yom Yerushalayim? Right, is the Mizmor of Yerushalayim. Right, we know that it's written by David. Shir Hamalot LeDavid, and so how more perfect to see what David thinks Yerushalayim is all about. Well, it's very clear. Samachti ba'omrim li beit Hashem neilech, right? Mikdash. Okay, how are we going to get to Mikdash? Amdori ragleinu b'sharayach Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim habnuya ki'ir shechubra layachdav. Yerushalayim is about unity, right? Unity and justice. Shesham alu shvatim shivtei ka unity. All the shvatim. Edut l'Yisrael hodot l'shem Hashem. Ki shama yashu kis'ot l'mishvat. Because that is the seat of justice, kisot lebeit David. And whose job is it to ensure justice? That's my job, right? Beit David. And that will be shalom. Sha'alu shalom Yerushalayim, Yishalayu Havayach. Right? That it will be the right the time when there will be peace being sought for Yerushalayim. Yihi shalom b'chaylech, shalav amenatayich. There will be peace in your dwelling places. For who? For whose sake? L'man achai v'rei'ai adabrana shalom bach, for the sake of my nation and for my people. L'man beit Hashem Elokeinu. Right? Because the Mikdash is about achai v'rei'ai. Right? They're the same thing. And therefore you have these two parallel psukim. Okay? And I want to end with two little addendums. One is just a beautiful story that my husband told me. Rav Yitzchak Levi, who was an expert on Har HaBayit, took my husband and a bunch of people like one of these serum on Har HaBayit. And when he ended, he told them this story. He said, I was talking to a group of political activists, okay, I think right-wing political activists. He said, I took them on a serum of Har HaBayit. And then I said to them, says Rav Levi, you're probably wondering, how can I bring the Mikdash, right? That's you're dedicated to bringing the Mikdash. How are we going to bring it in our time? And he said, well, I want to know, if you're a lawyer, how much time have you dedicated to pro bono cases, right, to fight the cause of the weak, right? If you are just a layperson, are you fighting for agunot? Right? What are you doing to create more justice in our times? Because if you want the Mikdash, that's the way to bring it, right? And it's and he quoted this pasuk in Yeshayahu. Right, I will make your judges like they were in the beginning, just and peaceful, right? And well, not peaceful, but just and whatever. Acharekein yikarei lecha ir hatzedek, kirya ne'emana. Only right then you will be called the city of justice. Okay, and then it explicitly says, Sion b'mishpat tifdeh v'shaveha b'tzedakah. Tipadeh. Thank you. Right, Yerushalayim will be redeemed through justice. That's it. It's very simple. You want to redeem Jerusalem? You know, you have the kind of criterion right here. Okay? And just one more thing to end with, because it just happened last night. And if it hadn't happened last night, you would have thought that I took my whole shir from this, but I promise you that I just heard this for the first time last night. I was in our Yom Yerushalayim celebration in Shul, and our rabbi, Rav Rimon, read this letter that Rav Neria, who was a student of Rav Kook, wrote 2 days after Yerushalayim was redeemed, was captured in 1967, was liberated, okay? After the old city was liberated, okay? And he asks the question, why did we have to wait all these years, right, in his time? Why didn't we get this in 1948? Why do we have to wait till 67? And what he says is, and I'll just paraphrase, well, we know that Yerushalayim is the city of unity. And Yerushalayim can only be redeemed when we are united. In 1948, we were not united. He said, we captured Yerushalayim, the Palmach was coming in one gate, the Etzel, right, Begins were coming in the other gate. There was a lack of unity among the people. And it's only now, in 1967, when the entire country was united, he said symbolically, Tzva Haganah Yisrael, right, that we were ready to capture Jerusalem. And we were ready to capture Yerushalayim. Okay, because it can only happen when the people are united. And then he says, "Me'anyein anu motzim rayon domeh ka'asher ha'amayudi harishon kapshu Yerushalayim." Right, and he basically quotes the story of David. He says, "You know, the same thing happened in the time of David. David waited for the Yerushalayim ha'irak dosha lo nechvesha b'mahalach ha'kibush shel Yehoshua, Hugam lo haitam uftecha b'tukfar ha-shoftim. Right? It wasn't captured by Yeshua, it wasn't captured by the shoftim. Gam lo Shaul ha-melech didn't capture it. Only when David did it, uniting all the people, were we able to capture Yerushalayim. So I think that, obviously, okay, the message is, I won't belabor my point. I'll let, and then you guys can be free to go to lunch.
Your thought, they all went in through
Shabbat. Yes, and he says that. He says they all went in together. He says exactly that. I'll find it for you, whatever, if you want to see it. Here, Nechnesu Derech Shar HaYofi Yerushalayim, in unity. He says that. They all came in through one shahar, not through many shaharim. Okay, enjoy lunch. Enjoy the rest of your day. Rav Limon.
Yeah, Darren, thank you very much.
We don't have a
Hanabai. Oh, my God.